All right. Hi, friends. This is Shadima, also known as the Type A Hippie, and this is the Type A Hippie podcast. Chicas episode, I said 56, which is crazy, crazy good. So I have some amazing friends on the podcast with me today, and I'm really, really excited. So they're going to actually introduce themselves in their own words, and this may have changed from the last time you heard from them, which was I've interviewed both of them individually on the podcast. So the first person I would love to reacquaint you all with is John Pavlovitz. He is an author and an all-around upstanding good guy. So John, welcome back.
Hello, my friend. So good to be with you.
Thank you for being here. So tell everyone who you are.
Yeah, so far, I'm a 20-year local church pastor and who's been trying to figure out how to expand the reach of the church, the arms of the church, and run into some turbulence along the way, but a lot of great surprises. So I'm just here trying to figure out, you know, where I'm supposed to be and how I fit into the bigger picture of the church.
Love that. Love that. And then we have Gina Pollard. So Gina was on here last time as well, and we talked about a lot of different things, and she has definitely spoken life into so many people, and her community is far-reaching. It's not just her local community. Similar to John, it's beyond. And so Gina, welcome back.
Thanks. It's so good to be here. It's great to be here. I welcome these conversations. They're really good.
Right? It's so good. So Gina, tell other people who may not know who you are, who you are.
So let's say first I'm a certified grief recovery specialist. That came about through doing a lot of abuse ministry, including spiritual abuse ministry, which is really where my passion is. I am an ordained pastor and an ordained minister and have been involved in all sorts of conversations about what the church is doing right and where it needs to step up and be more countercultural like Jesus is. So.
Awesome. Thank you. So I wanted to first delve in. And so we always do a pre-call, friends, and they're always so lovely. And sometimes I wish I hit record for those, but to honor my friends and just kind of what can come from it, we don't hit record there, but then we start the conversation now. And so one of the things I wanted to talk about, both of you mentioned kind of finding your place and finding your way. And so one thing that we didn't touch on in the pre-call is deconstruction. And so I want to delve into what that means for you. I mean, it's kind of a hot topic right now. A lot of people are talking about deconstruction and, you know, everyone has, I think that it's important to define terms and kind of relate it to our own lived experience. And then we can bring people alongside so that we're all on the same page. So Gina, would love to hear kind of where you land on that and what that means to you.
When I came back to the church and back to the life of faith after having been away for a while, I recognized that it had to be different for me. It needed to be what I call not my mama's faith and not my papa's faith. It needed to be my own. I needed to work out who God was in my mind as opposed to the way that I had been raised in the good old Southern tradition of that. What I am finding is thanks to a lot of the political climate right now and where the church has failed to actually take care of the poor and the sick, that a lot of people are questioning who this Jesus is that they've been sold compared to who the actual Jesus is. And when you add to that questions around gender equality and racism,
sure,
people have decided that, yeah, this is not comfortable for me, and I don't know that I can believe in a God who has those characteristics of being vengeful and mean. And so with my clients, with myself, with a lot of the speaking I'm doing lately, deconstruction is all about looking at the old ways that we've been taught, going back to the Bible and looking at it through new lenses, which also means that we start recognizing that Jesus was from the Middle East. And so this westernized view that we have of who Jesus is and what it means to be a Jesus follower no longer works and never really worked in the first place. So sure. Then if that never really worked, what does it mean now? And how can we best live that out in the world aside from labels and aside from tradition in a lot of cases?
I love that. Thank you. Yeah, it's important. So, John, you mentioned some of this in your book, A Bigger Table, and how in your own personal story, you had to kind of go backwards to go forward, similar to what Gina's saying. So can you kind of expand on that?
Yeah. For me, I came to ministry sort of later in life. So it was a second career. So in my late 20s, I ended up sort of volunteering in the church and sort of got drafted into ministry. And what that meant was I didn't have a lot of the pre-programmed ideas about what Christians were supposed to be, or especially what pastors and ministers were supposed mm-hmm. to be. And so what happened was over time, I started seeing a tension between the Jesus I was seeing in the scriptures and the one I was encountering in organized Christianity. And as that tension grew stronger and stronger and the pull was greater, something had to give. And so I began sort of walking into a more authentic version of my personal faith. And with that came the collateral damage to my career and my ministry career. And so what I'd say for me is deconstruction is for me trying to figure out what I can discard, what I can jettison from that tradition and still call myself a Christian. You know, at the heart of it, what does that word really mean? And what did it mean at the time? And what is the church supposed to look like? You know, we get the book of Acts, and then after the book of Acts, we really don't see how it played out other than in our history. And we don't see if that was Jesus' heart. Yeah. And so deconstruction for me is trying to figure out what is the heart of Jesus? What was he intending for this to be? And so that's where we are.
I love that. Did you want to add something, Gina?
No, I'm agreeing with virtually everything you said. Yeah.
Hey, awesome.
Yeah, so we're
good. I knew I liked you.
Well, I knew this was going to be an amazing conversation, let me tell you. You know, yeah, it's, I often am concerned when I think about what are people thinking, people who never had faith, this particular faith perspective, right? And would they feel comfortable here? And what am I doing personally or professionally even that is drawing someone in closer to a relationship with a power that they may not understand or, you know, driving them away? So that's really important to think about, you know, going back to a text that was written so long ago that is applicable now and seeing, okay, line items, right? Like not even pros and cons, but like how does this relate? Sure. You know, where is the truth in this and what do we do with that? So,
I think, can I interject here? I think
absolutely
is that, organized religion has, and I, you know, we're both pastors here. So, you know, I'm blaming pastors in a lot of ways for this, for saying you don't need to think about the scriptures on your own. We're going to interpret it for you. And only the way that we interpret it is the way that it can be understood. So that has caused a lot of biblical illiteracy, unfortunately, for people. And the other part of it is that the Bible has been used for so long to... clobber verses have come up when we talk about slavery, when we talk about divorce, when we talk about virtually anything, and people said it's in the Bible, whether or not it really is. And so people have figured out, yeah, that's not the case in a lot of ways. And so therefore, what does the Bible really say?
Yeah.
And also, are we looking at the Bible as descriptive of the character of God, or are we looking at it as prescriptive for everyday living?
Sure. Yeah. Question for you, Gina. You were talking about spiritual abuse during your intro. What is that? And how does this all relate? Because you did kind of shine a spotlight on pastors. And Friends, you don't have the benefit. I get to look at these beautiful souls during this interview, and it's the first time I'm doing it. But John was shaking his head, yeah, in agreement. So what is spiritual abuse if someone's not aware of that terminology?
So spiritual abuse really is using, and it happens not just in Christianity, it can actually happen in any faith tradition, is using threats of, in the case of Christianity, going against the Bible, not being a good Christian, going to hell, those kinds of things, in order to exert power over people and keep them subjugated. So a really good example of that, and I, because of the abuse ministry that I do, is women who have been told that in order to be a good Christian wife, let me put that in air quotes, a good Christian wife, that they must submit, there's another favorite word that we use, to the whims of their husbands, to the point of marital rape, to the point of keeping them at home, to the detriment of their lives, the total detriment and beating down of who they are. And what happens is it becomes an existential thing, because then they believe that God can't love them either. And it's pervasive and it's vile.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, Gina, I'd say there's also sort of like an institutional spiritual abuse that, yeah, that we see, you know, and a lot of it is not even intentional. There's sort of this sort of insidious nature to ministry at times, that once you're in that position, the power that comes with that and the influence that comes with that is so seductive, and it leads people to, you know, become more about self-preservation. Than anything. And when you begin to send out these messages, and I was thinking about our church, you know, a church in Charlotte I was a part of for almost 10 years, and it's a mega church, a couple thousand people on a Sunday, and it was filled with really good people, and even the staff were really faithful, decent people. But I look at being there for almost 10 years and thinking that I only heard the voice of maybe five people on the platform during that 10 years. Mm-hmm. And you look at that few people speaking into the community that is so massive, there's no way that that can't get polluted. You know, so I think the decentralizing of the church needs to happen.
And I know some churches where if the church itself has not created the program or the message itself, that it is not a valid, because if it's outside of our four walls, it's not a valid thing anymore. And that gets to be a little ridiculous too, because there are other voices that can speak into your community.
Right. Yeah. And I think I shared with Shadima, you know, and I'm probably in the book as well, when I got fired, it was like the greatest gift that I had been given. I don't wish that upon all ministers, but there was a freedom that came with that when I was no longer beholden to that thing. So suddenly the way I expressed my Christianity, my personal faith convictions changed. It just was.
Yeah, I left the church earlier this year because they would prefer that I not talk about racism. And I'm an African-American preacher and you want me not to talk about racism? And then they coddled somebody on the board who's actually posted some of the most vile, racist stuff. And I thought, oh, so you're more concerned because I'm talking about racism than about racism itself, which gets to be like, wait, something doesn't work here. And so, oh, and then they didn't like my position because I wouldn't disavow my support of the LGBTQ community. And I'm like, yeah, no, you don't get to tell me that either. So when I left, suddenly it was like, oh my gosh, I can use my voice and I can love people the way that I want to love them, as opposed to who's looking over my freaking shoulder. So yeah, I get it.
That's beautiful.
It sounds like you both have a lot in common in that arena. Because John, that's something you mentioned previously when we spoke about some of the blog posts that you were writing and just being LGBTQ affirming in your church.
Yeah. And the thing about it is there's to be an authentic follower of Jesus means to be offensive to someone.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus speaks these words and they fall upon a large audience and they're not all, not everyone is receptive to it. And so you know that that pushback is going to come. And when it comes from inside the church, that's when it's most distressing, because you have this image of, there are these people who are not going to get this. You know, and I was writing today, and Jesus says in Matthew to the religious leaders, hey, the prostitutes and the tax collectors are entering the kingdom. Like, yeah, they're getting this. And so right now, that's where we are. In conflict with the institutional church more than anything else. And that's a strange place to live, yeah, to be sort of fighting your tradition for your faith.
Yeah. You know, and for me, in beginning to be more of a vocal ally and more outspoken, what was really helpful is the emails and the calls that I was getting from people saying, thank you for telling my story. And thank you for telling me that God could love me too.
Yeah.
And that's a really sad commentary when people are not feeling like God loves them too. And it's humbling, but it's also more like, we're not doing a good job of spreading the good news.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you get someone, you know, that will say to me, hey, John, you're my pastor. Who had an opportunity to minister to them and to be that nurturing presence, and they're not. And so that, so you have that joy that you have, that you're connecting with people outside of that construct, but then, yeah, you also have this
absolutely
grief.
And that's the hard part, and I see that a lot in my practice, is the grief that people have, that these are the people I thought that I could trust, that I could come to, that would love me and that would hold my hand going through this, and instead I got shame. Yeah. Or instead they got quiet, they ghosted me. And so that's a really, really hard place for people to be too. And so to walk alongside them and reassure them is really important work.
Yeah, and not to monopolize the conversation, Chidimo, I just wanted to follow up one more thing, is that we do get to be a voice that represents the voice of God, yes, for people,
yes,
even if we don't intend to. And so it does, as Gina said, become an existential thing when, if I'm experiencing this cruelty in this community, that must reflect on the God, on what God thinks of me.
Sure.
That's pretty scary.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, I like to say it's God with skin, you know, because sometimes people can't feel the presence of the divine or see it, right? And if you don't have experience with that, and this is new to you, then you only have the one thing. You don't have, you're not able to look back, right, and remember, yeah, where you've been loved and where you've been taken care of. And so this is an opportunity for us. So that leads me to another question for you all. How does one kind of stand up for, or, you know, stand up to, whether it's racism, sexism, homophobia, you know, how does someone who, it's kind of percolating, now they know that they can't unsee what they've seen, right? You can't unring a bell that's been rung. How does someone who is not maybe a John or a Gina, and they feel like they don't have the bandwidth to do it, or they don't have the voice to do it, how do you encourage someone to just kind of do it?
John?
I think part of it is you can be overwhelmed. And right now there's sort of an exhaustion that people feel. Because you can look here and say, gosh, I wish I should speak into that or this or that. And all these things are coming in. I think you have to pick something. You have to pick a hill that you're willing to die on and begin to walk into whatever that looks like in your context. It may be something as simple as, I used to have this conversation with an in-law and I used to stop and walk away. It may be about leaning into that conversation and not walking away and saying something. Or it may be, in the past, I wouldn't post this, but maybe it's about posting it and dealing with the fallout. So there are steps that you can begin to take that will lead you to the next one. You know, that's how it was with me. I just thought, I need to say this right now in this particular conversation.
Sure.
And that fuels you. It moves you to the next place.
Orlando was a seminal moment for me. Sure. It had been easy for me to talk about racial issues and gender equality issues. But I realized that with the my tribe at the time, that the LGBTQ issue was either being overlooked or ignored completely. And the morning of Orlando, I walked around saying, weeping, literally, and saying, I just can't be silent anymore. I just can't be silent anymore. And I think people find a point where it's like, I am willing to stand up when people come after me, because I will not let my friends and my family be torn apart anymore. And I think that John is absolutely right. You have to find the issue for you that is a big one, one that grabs your heart and absolutely will not let you go. And you have to make sure that you have great tribe that is supporting you, because when you make a statement in the public sphere, the public square, people, you've made yourself a target. So let's be really honest about that. Yes. And people will not be happy. So you need to make sure I have a great group of people who undergird me, so that when I catch flack from people, and that's the polite way of putting that, that they're there and they get it. And they're saying, no, this is still important work for you to do. And then the other thing that I've been telling people for months now, tap out when you need to.
Yeah.
Tap out when you need to. Self-care is freaking critical. So you tap out, you rest, you do what you need to do, and then you have to tap back in so that somebody else can take a rest too. Because you guys were in for a marathon. Yeah. This is not like it's going to be over. People keep talking about 3.5 years. No.
Right.
It's not. It's going to be, it's a lot longer fight because we've been asleep for too long.
Totally.
And so self-care and rest, and then get back in the fight when you can.
Yeah,
I was just talking to some people at Wild Goose about compassion fatigue.
Yeah.
And that Jesus, often they're like, where's Jesus? Well, he withdrew. And so he withdrew so that when he did engage the crowds, he could see them with compassion and not contempt, and he wouldn't be worn out. And so what we do right now, I know that I do, is I engage and I engage and I engage, and I so rarely withdraw. And so that two-step dance is just so important in what we're doing. I was thinking, Gina, as you were talking, how the scripture stories change for you as you walk down this road. Like, I used to hear the story of Jesus saying, hey, to follow me, you're going to have to hate your mother and your brothers and sister and all this. And it used to be framed as those non-believers are going to be those people. And now it's like the people who you know, who you love, who are part of the church, they're the ones that this is causing the split with. And that will mess with you, that whole switch.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. And I think for me, that was the most difficult time of all of this, is that the people that I loved and that I thought loved me, and to be fair, they loved me as best they could.
Mm.
Which may or may not have been that they loved me the way I needed to be loved.
Right.
To be fully seen. Yeah, it's an interesting thing to find out people that you love and respect come up with things and you're like, that is not who I thought you were.
Yeah.
Where the hell did you come up with that?
Yeah.
So.
And then you have that in your church. Like, we have that in our local community, that after the election, people who won't you realize who they voted for are thinking, I thought I knew this church community. Yeah. I thought we were like in this together, and gosh, what now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so true. So, Gina, I'm with you. Orlando was a big one for me. That was a turning point for me. So I wanted to tap on to one thing that you said, that racism, speaking out against racism and gender inequality, was easier for you at the time. And then the shooting in Pulse nightclub in Orlando, I think it was June 2016, happened. And that became something that you really felt compelled to talk about. How do you all kind of navigate the intersection of all of these, right? So there's the intersectionality of race and gender or sexuality and all of that stuff as it relates to faith perspective. So it's not so much jumping on everything, right? John, you had mentioned kind of picking one thing, and moving forward with that. So how do you navigate kind of multiple arenas simultaneously. And then I do want to circle back to self-care, and you all leave us with one tip for self-care for each of you, something that you do.
You know, I think for me, when I first, the first issue for me was LGBTQ equality mm-hmm. in the church. And so what I was doing, I don't know if we talked about this last time, but I started taking a couple verses. I thought those were isolated verses about this issue that I was going to look at. And of course, what I ended up doing was looking at all of the tradition of scripture and saying, well, what can I really hold on to here? What do I really believe? So that intersectionality, it happens as you walk down that road. You know, for a cis heteronormative white guy, right? This has been a really, it's like 2 years ago, the places where I thought I would be going, I would never have believed it. But life informs you as you move, right?
And
diversity comes to your doorstep, and you begin, it sort of expands what your heart actually cares about. So, yeah, I don't know whether there's no answer in there other than that just, it's been astounding to see that happen.
Sure. I think for me, it was really interesting when Charleston happened, the shooting in Charleston happened, and all of the young black men getting killed, you know, that's kind of what you grow up with. It's part of your gestalt when you are, when you're African American and you grow up in this country. So those were sort of the things that I sort of knew. I remember asking my mother during the summer of all the shootings, saying, what are you thinking about all these shootings? And she said, well, how do you know? We've always known they were going to kill our young men. Hmm. You know, and it's like, okay, so that is kind of who we are. It's kind of what we know. And as a woman who's called to preach and called to be a pastor, has always been a leader, I'm used to fighting that fight. I'm used to the racism thing. And it became a bridge too far for me when the shooting just started to just include everybody now. And so that was a tipping point for me. For me, it all boils down to that all people are born in the image of God.
Yeah.
It comes down to the Imago Dei in concept and as lived out. It's not just enough for us to give, you know, life to old hymns and talk about how blessed we are. Hashtag so blessed. Sorry, I had to do that.
So annoying. My goodness.
anyway, but I digress. If nobody's free, if all of us aren't free, to do the old hackneyed quote, but I think that was really critical.
Thank you. I love that. So how do you self-care, Gina, or what's the thing that you, what is your go-to self-care prescription?
I unplug from everything. I do. I block it on my calendar that I'm off that day. And it's so funny because I counsel pastors and therapists to do the same thing, to just sort of go take that day, block it on your calendar. So when somebody asks you what you're doing that day, you can go, sorry, I'm booked.
Yeah.
And you're not lying, and you've now given yourself permission mm-hmm. to take the time off. The other thing that I have found is really important is for me to let my inner circle know I'm taking the day because then they're also really protective of me mm-hmm. taking that day or that weekend as well. But if I don't book it, it doesn't happen. If I don't put it on my calendar, it just does not happen. And if I don't get away from social media for a day and stop watching the news for a day, it does not happen. It'll sure. be there, you know, when I come back to it. But there are times my heart gets too full and there's not enough room in my head for all of the blue language that's going on in there that I need to kind of go, okay, that's too much right now. I'm going to explode.
Totally. Yeah, you know, in talking with some people about compassion, I was remarking to them that compassionate people, there is an element element of narcissism that can develop when you're when you help people and they tell you you've been helpful. Uh-huh. That feeds your ego and it gives you worth, and so you start buying into that superhero complex. And the thing about, you know, I remember a pastor early on saying to me, John, I have two great pieces of news for you. One is that there is a savior, and the second is that you're not him. And it's really, you know, like there are days when you say, oh my gosh, I need to be here for these people, as if you're not, someone is not there for them.
Right.
And so, you know, I would say to remember who you are not as you do this work.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, we talk about Jesus and he sees the crowds with compassion and he moves toward them. And we always assume we're supposed to be Jesus in that. Sometimes we're just the crowd that is harassed and helpless, and we have to just allow ourselves to be cared for.
Yeah.
That's what I say to people.
I went to a workshop not too long ago, and the workshop facilitator, I went as a participant, which was like so good, not as the leader. And she had us write ourselves permission slips. Apparently Brené Brown writes permission slips that she walks around with in her pockets all day long. And it was a Brené Brown workshop. And so the facilitator had us write permission slips. And my permission slip for myself that day was to just be a participant. I didn't have to know anything. I didn't have to lead anything. I just got to soak up knowledge and be fed. And it was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to start doing that more often. Remember, I don't have to be in charge. There are other people.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
That is so true. I think that's one of the lessons that I learned actually from you, Gina, is sometimes it's easy to think, oh, well, I have this information. This is good information, you know, and I need to share it. And every opportunity is not an opportunity to share good information. Sometimes someone else can step in and share the exact same information and is perfect, you know, because perhaps it was supposed to be received by that the other person. And sometimes it's good to just kind of chill and be a part of, you know, one of many and not up here or down below. So really good stuff.
Sometimes we have to allow people to grow, and they don't grow if we're always the ones that are leading. There's no way to apprentice other people or let them step into their own voice and their own talent if we're always the ones that are doing it.
True. So, so true. So any last minute amazing words of inspiration, insight, you all have for listeners or anything. I did want to touch on, and I think some of it's been answered though, to be honest, in terms of the grief. But any, you know what, actually I will ask that in terms of grief and, you know, so if someone has taken time away, right, they are participating and they pull away and they're engaged in self-care, and then they come back and some of these lingering feelings of grief or desolation or frustration persist. As, you know, spiritual leaders, I'm sure you guys wouldn't use that for yourselves, so I can use it for you because y'all are badass and amazing, you know. All you have to do is say, I received that, Shadima, you know.
Right.
So
I'm giving myself permission.
It's going on my website, too.
That's right. That's right. So what other tools or resources, friends, would you have for someone that is kind of struggling still? You know, they've done what has been advised of them, and they, you know, the TV is still persistent, or, you know, podcasts are listening in because they want to participate. They have a genuine, their heart is hurting right now. So how can they take care of themselves beyond self-care?
Sean?
I'm gonna phone a friend. I think, you know, when I think about grief, I had a mom of a child who came out to her a few years ago, and she said, you know, my daughter had thought about this for years, and so her clock had been running. And when she told me, my clock just started running, and I needed to give myself time to catch up to where she was at to process all this. And when we think about grief, we're still so early into this administration, let's say, that all this stuff is so new that even getting a little time away I mean, we're just beginning to understand the gravity and the scope of it. And so part of it is just saying, listen, you have to live with this thing and realize that where you are now is not where you're going to be. You know, you just have to try to trust that you're going to get what you need when you get there. But right now it just feels so overwhelming for caregivers, especially. We just look at the day and we say, oh gosh, you know, I thought I rested, but there it is. And it's loud and it's, you know, exponentially magnified every day on social media. So I think it's about right-sizing the grief that's in front of you, you know, right-sizing. Just Jesus says that, you know, you take what you can for a day, what you need for a day. You just have to be present in the present grief that you have. And sometimes that's going to make you run, and sometimes it's going to make you dig your heels in and move toward it.
I think that you also have to understand that grief is not just about death, that there are all sorts of things that people grieve. If we look at the stress scale that everybody has, it's, you know, there's 43 kinds of losses that people have that can result in grief, and it's cumulative. So it's not just one thing at a time. So you really have to look at what else is going on in your life that might require your attention. Because it may be that you're going through a divorce. It may be that you have an ailing parent. There are all sorts of things. I work a lot with women whose children have gone to prison. And for them, one of them in particular that got me started on this grief thing, she just didn't understand that her son going to prison was something that she needed to grieve, because she had expectations that would not be met. She had a relationship with her son that was going to change. And so for a lot of us, it's not just the political grieving that's going on, it's the loss of relationships.
For sure.
And it's cumulative. And there's a profound feeling with a lot of people that the world is just not the same anymore, because I can't go home for Thanksgiving without it being a sense of difficulty for me. And so you have to acknowledge what is. You know, don't run from it. Don't try and numb it. Don't hide behind behaviors that are just going to medicate it. And you have the right to establish boundaries. It is quite okay for you to limit your time with people that you find that are toxic for you. And also find and make time for your tribe. You need to cultivate a tribe that's going to be there to support you.
Yes.
You know, I've had a group of people for we're going into our sixth year now, that once a month it's dinner and it's tabletop time, and it is all messy and gross and joyful and celebratory and supportive. It is all of those things at once. And I would literally not be here today had it not been for my tribe.
Right. Well, because the two biggest things you feel when you're in that state of pain is I'm either alone or I'm out of my mind.
Yes.
And that community helps remind you that neither of those is true.
It's true.
And
absolutely.
It helps you face the insanity of what you're dealing with, you know?
Yeah. For me, it was also helpful to find a faith community that's my new tribe, that we agree on some things. And so I am absolutely loving my new tribe and feeling supported and feeling free then to be able to do the work that God has called me.
Sure. Awesome. I love that. Thank you all so much. That is good information. So Gina, you do work with people via Skype and Zoom or any other way, correct?
That's correct. And awesome. In person.
And in person, okay. if you're
wow,
local.
You're meeting people in person.
Yes.
How strange.
Right? So that's awesome. So if you need Gina's services, I will include her contact information in the show notes, of course. She is absolutely amazing and is definitely one of the ones that really hears people and sees people. So if you are in need of her services, please, please, please connect, because she's putting her hands out to you, reaching out to you. So all you have to do is reach back out and she'll be there on the other end, whether face-to-face or using technology, which is great. And John has a new book out. It's available for pre-order called A Bigger Table, building messy, authentic, and hopeful spiritual community. And John is the, what is it, the room? What is the spiritual community that you're also kind of working on? Is
the,
the table.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of what I've been thinking through, and I'll be talking more about with people like yourself, is what does this look like? Like, where is this all heading? You see people from disparate places saying, boy, I feel something different is necessary. I feel that spirituality needs to look different. And more than just somebody writing and someone else reading, what does it look like to build this thing? So that's what I'll be kind of doing with my life for the next, hopefully, few decades.
Yeah, I agree. I'm really excited. And there was a piece that you just, I think, went live today about atheists, agnostic, and non-Christians. Yes. And so one of our, Gina and I have a mutual friend in common, Stephanie, and we were talking about, you, John, because you often are part of the discussion, even though you're not there with us. And so we were just like, you know, you're doing something right. Right. And it, and this is something that we've discussed even here today on the podcast, is that, you know, you're doing something right when people, you're rubbing up against people and people are rubbing up against you, you know, yeah, in certain communities. And so that is definitely something that you've done. So thank you for that. Friends, I will link John's information as well in the show notes. So if you want to get in contact with him, read more good stuff from his blog. I think he posts daily, and there's a lot of really good information, and it could be helpful actually in facilitating a conversation with someone who has differences of opinion. You know, I'm always a fan of let's share a meal, you know, let's talk over coffee or tea. Let's do something. And then still have those boundaries in place. So thank you all so, so much for being here. I really, really appreciate it. And I'm so glad that it was, we were able to make it happen.
Yeah. John, good to meet you.
Oh, you too. So, so excited to have a voice with a face, and this is awesome.
It's so good. It's so good. Thank you for all the work that you're doing. Seriously.
Oh, thank you.
You keep me going. Chidima, thanks for getting this together.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. So I just want to read, I think I'm just going to do, two stories from Humans of New York, and then we'll close with the prayer that we typically use, and then everyone will be back to their day. All right, so yeah, it was my pleasure, and I so appreciate you all, you both. Okay, so it's a young kid, appears to be a little boy or a young boy, and it says, I want to be an artist. What kind of art do you want to make? I want to make different versions of myself. And that kind of goes in alignment with some of what we've discussed, how we get to grow and change. And then a young woman, what appears to be a young woman sitting on some luggage in the subway. I wish I had partied a little less. People always say, be true to yourself, but that's misleading because there are two selves. There's your short-term self and there's your long-term self. And if you're only true to your short-term self, your long-term self slowly decays.
I like it.
Interesting perspective, yeah?
Yes.
All right. So, I honor the place within you where the entire universe resides. I honor the place within you of love, of light, of truth, of peace. I honor the place within you where when you are in that place in you and I am in that place in me, there is only one of us. So friends, have a gratitude-filled day. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Type A Hippie Podcast. This is ChiCast episode 56. Rate, review, and subscribe. I love you all. Take care. Namaste.
Namaste.
Peace.